hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. Sorry, .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, here's a story that just came out today. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Saskatchewan are seeking suspects in a romance scam that stole more than $360,000 combined from seven women. And a picture of these four very sinister-looking Negroes. RCMP in Saskatchewan are looking for four men who are believed to be part of a long-term romance scam and tied to an international criminal organization with a history of running similar grifts. Police said a two-year investigation has resulted in the arrest of one person accused of participating in the scam, which allegedly stole more than $360,000 combined from seven different women. RCMP said the criminal organization operating the scams is believed to be responsible for defrauding people more than $2 million over the last 2 years. That must be, I guess, a larger organization than these four members of. In January 2018, the RCMP received a complaint from someone who said their name was used without their permission or knowledge in a fraudulent transaction online. The Saskatchewan RCMP Federal Serious and Online Crime FSOC unit investigated and discovered the incident of fraud was linked to several others with victims across the country. Five men are believed to be living in Regina at the time. Sorry, five men believed to be living in Regina at the time of the frauds were suspected to be involved. One 28-year-old Austin Newton was arrested and charged on January 15th of this year. he faces numerous fraud-related charges. A Canada-wide warrant was issued for 24-year-old Kelvin Awani, 22-year-old Jonah Igbuluesi, 25-year-old Joshua Ometi, and 27-year-old Clinton Newton. And people, if you have any information, call the RCMP. Federal Serious and Online Crimes Unit, or FSOC, created a video outlining red flags of fraudulent online romance scams. Quote, RCMP FSOC was struck by the apparent authenticity of these online romances and by the time devoted to, by the suspects to the people they victimized. RCMP Inspector Wayne Nichols said the alleged scammers were patient and waited for the women to believe that they were in a true, intimate relationship before asking for money from them, sometimes up to 8 months. He said the women met the man through gaming apps and online dating sites. He said gifts, photos, and personal family details were shared between the women and the men involved. In one case, both parties exchanged engagement rings. It made sense to me to believe this was a real relationship, he said. When the scammers did ask for money, he said they made it sound urgent. For example, he said the women were told the money was needed to pay for an accident at work, an operation, or the birthday of a child. Birthday of a child? Aren't they supposed to be in a relationship with these women? No, not their child, presumably. Every time, he said, the women were told the women were told they would be repaid. Because romance scams feature a variety of similar elements, Nichols outlined the following as things to look for to prevent someone from falling victim of a romance scam. One, the person claims to have experienced a tragedy or complication in life. So you immediately feel sympathetic for this Negro. These are males. The person claims to be working in a remote location where they can't access a bank account. Yeah, there's all usually a problem with actually communicating with them. Like, they may, they're not able to take a phone call, which is odd. Or they don't have Skype, where you at least would be able to see the person in real time and talk to them. The person claims that they need money urgently for medical expenses or fees to free up money being held by a third party. And that's a very frequent scam, whether it's romantic or not. I probably will get one or two of these every day. A letter from somebody whose name may be vaguely familiar. You know, I am Aisha Gaddafi, the wife of the late Muammar Gaddafi, and I've and then usually it's some variation of, and I've got $20 million in a bank account, but I can't access it. But I'd be glad to share it with you. Now, you know, pinch yourself. Take a reality pill. Would somebody that you don't know and have never met really intend to share several million or many millions of dollars with you, or even many thousands? But come on. Why did they contact you? They don't even know you. But the old greed bug can bite and make the brains atrophy. The person claims they need the money. The person claims the money has to be sent to a third party or another person who would then send the money to them. Now, if I want you to send money to me, why would I have you send money to Joe, who'll give it to me? This is an immediate red flag. Not honest. I'll tell you why. Well, if you send it to me, it might be traceable to me. And if I've scammed you, you're my contacts, you know my name, or at least the name I'm using, some address. And usually, of course, it's not a simple matter of sending something, put the check in the mail. And that is certainly one defense. So what's your mailing address? And if you're told, well, actually, I don't have a mailing address. Oh, really? You're what, living under a bridge somewhere? In which case, do I really want to deal with you? Or another elaborate excuse would be, why can't I, so for instance, I want to send a Western Union, some of us, money through Western Union to you. Why can't I do that? Oh, well, my identity card or my carte d'identité has been stolen. Now, you see, in order to collect the money, the recipient has to present identification that exactly matches the name to which you have sent the money through Western Union. Well, if in fact they're using a false name, that won't be possible. Or if they don't want to be directly involved, even better. So they're giving you the name of another person. And you know, of course, it's all a scam. And the RCMP continues, if the person you are communicating with online or over the phone is telling you he or she is in one of those situations and is asking you for money, do not give them that money, the RCMP said. Well, yeah, absolutely. Any relationship that seems to usually more quickly than average, but if they're really sophisticated, it may take a little while, come around to send me some money, or please send me some money to bail me out of a... this is not healthy. And of course, in almost all these cases, the people have never actually met in real life. This happens on some dating sites or people who get lists of people from the dating sites, where soon there are two immediate clues. If the person, we're talking here of a woman in regards to a man, but it could work the other way, too quickly starts using really strong terms of endearment, like darling or my in Spanish mi vida, my life, my prince. We all like to be flattered, but if that comes too quickly, you've got to wonder. Or my love, I cannot live without you. Yeah, what after 3 days of corresponding? Not likely. We can believe in love at first sight, but and then almost immediately you start getting they need money for any number of things, there's something wrong with their phone, so could you buy them another phone? Yeah, sure. Well, $500, no problem. and it's too bad, but there are, the internet is just a rife with scammers. Well, anyway, back to these five people. We've got photos of four of them. They're four very sinister-looking Negroes. My question is this. What is the immigration status of these con men and parasites? I should say alleged con men. Well, we're not told, naturally. From their names, I would bet a lot of money that they are immigrants or illegals, but the in other words, they're not Canadians. One of my questions is, if immigrants, how did they get into the country? I mean, specifically. Right to privacy. Bullshit. Right to privacy. Not acceptable. As citizens, we've got to demand accountability from our government. How did they get into this country? We're told that every immigrant, even refugees, are subject to a health test and a criminal records test or check. Now, who checked their criminal background? And I don't mean, oh, well, it was the immigration department. No. Individually, who checked it? Was this check a job well done? Did these guys suddenly become criminals when they ended up in Canada? It was possible, I guess, but there's got to be more accountability. And as you know, with government, there's very little. It's put down to, oh, well, the system. Okay, well, it would hardly be life in this time of the coronavirus pandemic hysteria if we didn't have one or two pandemic stories. Let's see. Oh, yes. Well, Thursday was a very frustrating day for me. I had a parcel to marry. To mail. Well, where would you go for to mail a parcel? Post office. Yeah, there's a post office not too far from where I live in Hamilton. Now, the normal post office hours are not very very generous, but they go till 5 o'clock. So that's about 4:30. So I take myself over to the post office, pull up. It's closed. I look at the door. Sign. Because of the coronavirus, new post office hours, they close at 4. A woman comes up, and she also wants to use the post office. She too is disappointed to see it's closed. Well, I let out with some pretty salty language. And I say, they're just effing lazy. And this is all bullshit. It is. The post office is deemed by the government, quite rightly so, as an essential service. All right, then stay open. Oh, well, coronavirus will cut the hours. Well, but think about it. We're also told that it's not a good idea to bunch together, you know, social distancing. Well, if you cut the hours, then you funnel the potential customers into a shorter period of time with a greater likelihood of crowding. Well, does this make any sense? No. And more in this pandemic, we were going to see businesses, governments, arbitrarily cutting back services and making a lot of rules that make no sense. And people are going to have to fight back. As I highlighted yesterday, there are people in Canada and the United States that are holding these protests, and rightly so, to open the economy back up. Okay, well, continuing with my post office story. Well, the post office in Canada also operates through certain businesses, in some cases, pharmacies or drugstores. So the little postal substation within the drugstore may not be able to do everything that the main post office can, but they can do many things. So I go over to the nearby drugstore. Well, of course, it's the Soviet Union all over again. A big lineup. Yeah, I have to have about 10 people back in a line. We have to line up because they only let so many people at a time into the drugstore, even though it's a big drugstore. Only, you know, for some arbitrary reason, they only allow a couple of people in. So they've got a gatekeeper who, when one person leaves, summons the next person to go in. Well, of course, I could join that line like a good obedient sheep and keep my head down and perhaps bah very, very quietly, but I don't. I speak out quite loudly that this is bullshit. People look. Yeah, I said, I'm in greater danger catching cold, and it was really cold and windy up on Hamilton Mountain yesterday. I'm in greater danger of catching cold than I am of catching the coronavirus. You know, the coronavirus has infected a tiny fraction of 1% of Canadians. Not to poo-poo it, not to say it's no concern, but you know, just because they decide to make you join this lineup, doesn't mean you've got to put on a big old happy face. Okay, finally I work my way up and I get into the drugstore. So now I'm at the little way in the corner. There's the postal substation, and there's one person ahead of me. So I join another line. Now this woman, I think, is as if she's transacting the nation's business. She's trying to send some money to Egypt, and there are various little complications. So I stand there. I wouldn't say twiddling my thumbs because my hands are occupied with this box of books I'm about to send out. But if I was, you know, slowly doing a burn, and the woman behind the counter there is a very officious woman. I've had issues with her once before. But anyway, finally, it's my turn, so I plunk my box on the counter, and she takes its measurements and so on, notes where it's going to go, and she tells me there's several classes of service you can choose, so I choose the least expensive, which is not cheap. Yeah, to mail the box of books to a person who lives about 250 miles away from me, not too far from Ottawa, is going to cost me over $20. But fine. Well, then as if she really wants to provoke me, she says, "Well, we can't guarantee delivery." Why, I ask? Oh, well, the coronavirus. What, the virus is potentially going to eat the mailman? She says, "Oh, no, the post office has cut back on staff." Well, once again, I say, "Well, it's an essential service. The government says so. Why would they cut back on staff?" "Oh, your coronavirus." "Well, no, that's no reason. Why would you cut back on an essential service? In fact, more profoundly, why would you..." I don't know whether they actually laid these people off, which makes the case they made them unemployed, or they're telling them to sit at home and do nothing and get a paycheck. Either way, not good. So they can't do, the long and short of it is they can't guarantee delivery. In fact, you know, that kind of jogged my memory. The man in question had written me a letter requesting these books on April the 6th. I picked up the letter. It was arrived in the mail on April the 15th. That's 9 days to go 250 miles in the same province, in the same country. "Yeah, I see, they can't guarantee delivery." "Well," I said, and I hope you follow my line of reasoning here, "well, as you can't guarantee delivery, and I'm paying this huge whack of money for, you know, this expedited service, do I get a discount?" Oh no, she said. I said, "Well, I guess I know I'm in Canada. The customer is always wrong." But she didn't like that. And she said, "Well, you don't seem to appreciate we're putting our lives on the line." I looked, you know, kind of raised my eyebrows like, "Oh, yeah, how's that?" "Well, we risk our lives having to deal across the counter with you, and not perhaps just me personally, but people in general, and accept your money." See, I insisted on paying cash. They don't like cash. But I want to make a point. I'm not going to go for the cashless society, which is what they'd like to impose on us. And I'm supposed to be all broken up with, "Oh, you're so brave, you know, I'd want to hug you." Well, of course, if I did that, that's sexual assault. But anyway, no, I wasn't sufficiently, appreciative. I said, "Well, you know, all these stupid new rules imperil my health. I've had to line up 3 times. Once at the post office, which happened to be closed. Then the second time to get into the bank, into the drugstore here. And then the third time indoors here to finally reach you on the counter. I'm imperiling my health having to add these extra trips and being outdoors in cold and windy weather, to a certain extent risking my health to do this. So, you know, I think we've got to call, wherever possible, call them on that. You know, don't put up with this crap. Today, I took a friend who doesn't have a car, and a friend's daughter, to one of my favorite markets, to shop, grocery shopping. You know, having a car is able to help this person bring back by perhaps more groceries than she might have been able to otherwise. And yeah, so it was, you know, good to meet up with a friend and, of course, to help out. So we arrive at the market. Well, would you know, why not? And it's, yeah, it's, and, you know, instead of joyfully accepting the role of a sheep, my friend pipes up that this is just like back under communism. I said, yes, line up for everything. You see, I don't believe it should be necessary, in most cases, to line up. I think the numbers of people are being kept artificially low in many of these places. It depends on the setting. But anyway, okay, we gradually work our way to the head of the line. Now it's our turn. Well, see, we all have to be different individuals, 6 feet apart. So, okay, I go first. And then my friend comes along. And then the friend's daughter. Well, not allowed. The daughter's not allowed. Why not? Well, only one person shopping from a family. I said, well, actually, we're two families. This is my friend. You know, we live separately. We're actually, you know, two completely separate families. Well, okay, well, reluctantly, my friend and I will be allowed in, but the daughter has got to stay out. Why? Well, she's old enough to stay on her own. Well, that's kind of an arbitrary decision, in my opinion, being made by a person I would say is probably a late teenager, if not that, then a woman in her early, very early 20s. And frankly, it's not your call, sweetheart, for any number of reasons, or even no particular reason. That teenage daughter, she's a young teenager, 14, has a right to be with her mother. Well, it would mean somebody else would have to wait. Yeah, well, they're your rules, not mine. And, you know, we dutifully stood in line, freezing, or let's say being rather cold. We've earned it. Anyway, rather than give in, my friend went back to the car with the daughter. You know, we will not surrender to bullying. And actually, there was another market where we only had to go join the sheep line for, you know, about 3 minutes. And my friend managed to get the grocery shopping done that she needed. But I urge people at every turn to push back, because many of these rules are just plain ridiculous. For instance, a feature in many cities across North America is something called allotment gardens. And in those, the state, usually the city, sets aside some land, usually the land on which crops will grow fairly well, and for a small rental fee, you can rent a garden. I'm hard-pressed to say that you know, it might be 2 or 3 yards by 6 or 7, but you know, a fair little chunk of ground. These developed during the war, when food was very scarce, particularly in England, and have become very popular all over the Western world as a place where, say, apartment dwellers who don't have own a patch of land can still have the joys of a garden. Okay, good thing. Hard to disapprove of this. Well, in many areas, Toronto included, not allowed. So So nobody's going to be able to get into their allotment gardens for the foreseeable future. This may not be critical right now. It's only mid-April, and it's pretty cold. But having gardened some in the past, I would say well, it's already time you could be putting in things like peas and onions. Well, why can't you? No reason. They just don't want you to. Well, why not? There's no reason for people to be on top of each other in these allotment gardens. It'd be perfectly easy to keep the 6-foot distance. Why not? Oh, somebody made the decision. Well, I think it's time that people push back. In that protest that was covered by the video I showed yesterday, one of the protests was in Michigan, and one of the things that one of the many things the protesters were complaining about was a rule that, at least in the state of Michigan, that they could not be sold garden tools or equipment at Walmart. They could buy t-shirts or food, but they could not buy garden equipment. Why not? Who knows? Just a rule. Well, we have to push back. You know, the problem with panic is that common sense goes out the window. Well, I was having a snack and watching CNN, my daily dose of poison, and there was that pompous, pontificating jerk, Chris Cuomo. And he had on a grinning Negro named Van Jones. And, this was the big boo-hoo-hoo about the far higher per capita infections among Negroes and Hispanics than among whites, and not mentioned very much, and Asians too, and the far proportionally higher death rates. Now, these statistics are probably not entirely accurate because not all states are reporting by race, but of those that are, this is what they found. This is per 100,000. There are 335 blacks who die per 100,000. 271 Hispanics per 100,000. 190 whites per 100,000. And 95 Asians per 100,000. Well, said Chris Cuomo, Van Jones said, we're dying in record numbers. And Cuomo said, the black death rate is because of systemic neglect and poverty. That doesn't explain why the Asians have the lowest death rate. Even though a small number of them who've been in Wuhan, China, were the ones who brought it back. But they have the lowest death rate. Why? Well, I don't pretend to know. But you see, the fact that they're not mentioned much, but with a relatively low death rate, are whites. So, you know, it's what is it? Well, you might have guessed it. You might not have, if you're reasonable, but I guess you know the way things work. It's systemic neglect, and it's about poverty and racism. I have to wonder what systemic neglect. You mean the blacks don't go to hospital or go and see a doctor? But presumably the whites and Asians do. It's about poverty. Well, not all blacks are poor. In fact, just the opposite. A good many are what would be called middle class. Not all whites are rich or even middle class. Asians probably all over the place. Some poor, many middle class, a few wealthy. Well, there's even going to be a special program tomorrow night called The Color of COVID. And do you know what that color is? Well, You get three guesses and the first two don't count. Of course, it's the black. So the color of COVID is black. They're the ones suffering the most. And it's all, you guessed it, because of us. Well, this debate has been going, story has been going on for, probably two weeks. And some people have, some commentators, I think, have quite sensibly pointed out, as with older people of all backgrounds, it's found that they, older people, are more vulnerable to this coronavirus. Why is that? Or they're more vulnerable to die from it. Why is that? Well, it turns out it's because of other existing medical conditions. Coronavirus, especially if it's severe, puts great stress on the body. If the body is already weakened by, let's say, a heart condition, or previous strokes, or diabetes, or any other serious illness, then it's more likely to stress the body beyond endurance and to kill you. Or perhaps looking at it just a little differently. If you are already quite sick, your body is run down, you may not be able to fend off coronavirus the way a healthier person can. Now, it would appear, with the odd exception, the younger people, or people of all ages who are healthy, are generally able to fend off the coronavirus, and it is nothing more than perhaps a little bit of fever that quickly passes. In some cases, it's more severe, but people are able to fight it off without having to go to the hospital. The more stressed your body is because of such things as high blood pressure or diabetes or heart condition or whatever, the less likely you are to be able to fend it off. Now, here's an article in the Current Atlantic by, you wonder, I mean, did they actually publish somebody like this? Yes. Ibrahim X, that's like the letter X, Kendi. And he is the director of anti-racist research and policy center at American University. One of the problems with the sad state of academia today is that there actually could be such a department as that, an anti-racist research and policy center, Ibrahim X. Kendi. I'm sure that's a name change. I bet he was probably, well, he actually says that he has preachers on both sides of his family. I don't think his mommy or daddy named him Ibrahim, but okay. Objective observers have been saying such things, quoting him. Americans are blaming black people. To explain the disparities in the mortality rate, too many politicians and commentators are noting that black people have more underlying medical conditions, but crucially, they're not explaining why in italics. Or they blame the choices made by black people on poverty or obesity, but not racism. When pressed on whether these underlying health conditions are rooted in years of systemic racism, Senator Bill Cassidy said, "That's rhetoric, but as a physician, I'm looking at the science." Now, this is preposterous nonsense. The generally poorer health of blacks as a group is as a result of racism. Well, does racism force people to eat a diet that may lead to heart conditions, to obesity? No, it doesn't. There are poor people in many parts of the world who are thin. Maybe thin because they don't get enough to eat, or thin because they choose a diet that is healthy. Choices lead to many of the medical conditions lead to to bad health for many blacks. But it's far easier to blame racism. And I think this is a place where we have to aggressively push back and call nonsense, I mean, not polite tonight, call nonsense what it is, nonsense. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Got to play something a little bit more, maybe happy and upbeat. We're told to try to be happy in these times, so let's have some good German beer drinking music. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
Thank you. Paul Frum. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Frum, and you're on the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com or rightresistanceradio.com. We hope we can get this Maple Leaf Forever played a little bit better than we did last night. Okay.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.